What's up, everyone? This is Cece. So I recently grabbed lunch with an acquiring editor from HarperCollins who told me that the number of submissions she's been getting has nearly doubled. And I wasn't surprised at all because every agent and editor I know has been talking about how the volume of submission keeps increasing. So personally, that is a wonderful thing because it's more reading for me, but it also means I have more chances of matching with authors. I consider it a privilege to review queries on Books with Hooks and, of course, in my submissions inbox. But at the same time, I talk to writers who tell me that they wish agents would read more than a few pages because, and I quote, "My story gets better in chapter two." I have to be honest, this kills me. It's like me wanting chocolate chip cookies to have the nutritional value of kale. It's just not realistic. Like it or not, no agent, no acquiring editor is going to stick around to see if a submission gets better. It's not because we're mean, it's because we get dozens and dozens every day. I know it's harsh, but ambitious writers embrace harsh realities. So here it goes. It's your job to make your opening pages irresistible, to make agents crave it, to make agents want to read more. That's why I'm so excited about my upcoming course, Starting It Right: How to Begin Your Story in the Best Place and in the Best Way. I created this course after studying hundreds of books. I've mapped out elements that are present in the beginning of all successful novels and memoirs. And I've designed checklists, actual checklists, that you can use to ensure that your story's beginning is seducing your reader. We'll cover how to write a great first line, different types of beginnings, and how you can choose the best one, the best place to start, and the best way to start. Yes, these are totally different things. When it makes sense to add a prologue and when it doesn't, how to frame your inciting incident in an appealing way, how to balance exposition and mystery, how to include context but not weigh it down with too much backstory, and what to do if your story has more than one POV or timeline. Most of all, I'm going to show you how to make readers want to turn to chapter two. Join me for this multi-day course designed to help you break through the noise. You'll leave with a clear, actionable breakdown of exactly what goes into a terrific beginning. If you've already signed up, come prepared to take lots of notes. We're talking hundreds of slides with real-world examples and specific techniques, plus a super fun surprise that I can't wait to share. I hope to see you there.
Welcome to another episode of Shooting the Shit with literary agents Carly Waters and Cece Lira, where we dissect publishing gossip, discuss book industry trends, and the overall state of the book business. If you've ever wanted to grab a coffee with two literary agents, grab your mug and pull up a chair. Welcome, everybody. We do not have a special guest today. You're back with just Carly and Cece, but we had such a good time last week talking with Andy, and I really want to unpack it all in our episode today. But Cece, how was your week so far?
It's just us. Just us. You guys are stuck with us. It's just the two of us. Week's been good. I'm drinking my second cup of coffee. It is decaf because it's my second cup of coffee in my succession mug. People on YouTube can see. This is season two, episode eight, my favorite episode where Ken sings L to the OG. It is the most cringy thing in the world. I love Succession and I miss it so much. So yeah, everything's good. Drinking my coffee, chatting with my friend. Yeah, all good. How about you?
Oh, all is well here. Our listeners should know. Well, I mean, it will have passed by the time that this airs, but it's your birthday weekend. It's Cece's birthday weekend. What are you doing this weekend?
Yes, it's my birthday weekend. So I am going to Aspen for the Summer Awards conference the day after. So like it's going to be very, which is what I love, low key. Like, since it's a Saturday, my husband and I are going to grab dinner. But then I have a lot of like pre-trip stuff to do, like packing. And I've mentioned this before. I don't know if people remember. I'm mostly gray. My hair is like at this point in my life, I'm mostly gray. I've been gray for many years. So I have to go to the hairdresser and do my roots because my roots are a disaster, and just do a lot of like, there was a financial expert. I follow her. She once did a thing about what she calls the hot girl tax.
Oh, yes.
Like nails, Like yes. My nails, for example, I'm getting my nails done. I haven't gotten them done in like a month.
And the hot girl hamster wheel.
Oh, okay. I don't want to misspeak, but it might have been her. Yeah. Anyway, I have to get my nails done. I mean, I don't have to. I am choosing to, people. And it is my choice. And then my roots. And so I have to do all that before the trip. And that's going to be on my birthday. Yeah, it is. It is. It's, you know, it's it, like how much of this is a choice? How much of this is the patriarchy? It's too long of a discussion. But I do try to do things that make me feel good. Like with the pandemic, this is actually really interesting because we couldn't do anything. Like we couldn't get our nails done. We couldn't go to the hairdresser, right? And I'm like a disaster doing anything by myself. Like if I can't outsource it, I won't do it. I will just not do it. I actually realized the stuff that I like doing and the stuff that I don't. Like there used to be stuff that I'm like, oh, I do this all the time. And now I'm like, no, the pandemic made me realize that was society imposing that on me.
Yeah.
And then there's other stuff that I'm like, I actually like this. Like when I go to the hairdresser, this is so nerdy. I bring my computer and I review queries.
Yeah.
I get work done. Yeah. Because it's like a very quiet place where I'm not like, it's not noisy or anything. I have privacy. So it's kind of nice actually. And yeah.
I bring my computer to the hairdresser too.
How often do you go? Because you're blonde. I know blondes have a lot of maintenance.
Yeah. I mean, the OG fans will know I've had many hairstyles over the years. When I had my like bleach out hair, I had to go frequently because it's just like, you just want it to be the right tone. So I was probably going like every 6 to 8 weeks then when I was like bleach out. But now I'm trying to go every more like 3 to 4 months. So my hair's kind of long right now. I have it pinned up.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm just so glad you're going to have a nice relaxing dinner with your husband and you're off to Aspen. Great. And that's why I'm doing a solo episode next week. So I posted this. I just posted this on Instagram. Cece and I are each going to take turns doing some solo eps just because of our travel. We genuinely try to make it work when we travel so much, but we were not able to make it work. So each of us are going to do a solo episode coming up. And I have some ideas as I just posted on Instagram. I'm thinking about either doing an excerpt from my course or just kind of figuring out if there's a topic you guys really want to deep dive into. So that is what I'm going to do. So I have a reel over on Instagram. You can comment or let me know. I probably would have made my decision by the time that you guys are hearing this. Hopefully, so I'll be prepared. But it's called Shooting the Shit for a reason. So it's all good.
Wait, do you have a poll going on Instagram? Because I want to vote. I have a vote on this.
I didn't make a poll. I just kind of let people decide.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I will still vote. I think you should do both. I think you should do a little bit of your course and then talk a little bit about I want it all. That's my vote.
Yeah. That's, you know, again, I mean, this is a podcast. We can just do whatever we want. That's the fun of it. Oh, and another thing I wanted to tell you guys is Cece and I had such a good time doing that Substack live a few weeks ago now, maybe a month ago. And we've set a time for our next Substack live. So specifically, this is for our podcast paid subscribers. And we're going to do another Shooting the Shit live on July 2nd at noon Eastern. And so I will send out a reminder to everybody who's on the app through their notifications about this, but we had such a good time that we thought we would do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited about that. It's going to be fun. What happens in the live stays in the live, people. Very important. Because we do get a little, our tongues are a little looser during these lives.
I would agree. And I wonder why. Maybe it's just the idea of like, I think it's because we know we're people. Like when you,
we can see the comments. That's why.
Yeah. We can see the comments, instant engagement. And yeah, we just like, no, we're nowhere with our people. So very loose lips, loose tongues, I would say for sure. So if you want our opinions on really anything, you can come along and hang out with us. So that'll be July 22nd at noon Eastern.
Yes.
So today, the main focus of our episode today is going to be really just reflecting on our conversation last week with Andy Bartz. We had such a good conversation. We got a lot of kind of feedback, whether it was DMs or just kind of comments from people about the episode. Lots of traction on like the reels that we had posted. And we hope you guys listen to the full episode, of course. Yeah. And then somebody wrote in a really long comment and I really wanted to unpack it because I think it gets at the heart of some of these concerns, because I think like theoretically, a lot of people agree with what we were saying about not using AI in our practice. But then in reality, again, which we also talked about in the show, that it's integrated into so many things. And there's a lot of people who have like walked themselves down a path where they're like, how do I walk myself back out?
Yeah.
So I'm going to read you this kind of long comment and we can get into this because I think it gets at the heart of, I think, in some ways, the heart of what we were trying to start, the conversation we were trying to start with last week's show. Okay, here we go. This is more of a response to this week's Shooting the Shit. So I apologize if it's not the suggestion you're looking for, but I think it's worth more conversation for a future Shooting the Shit because I suspect a lot of people are too scared to be honest about this. I wish I could turn back time and never use AI, even in the smallest parts of my work for my book. I am one of those people pressured into figuring out AI for work. I always hated how it, quote, writes, end quote, and have never used it that way, and decided that testing it with a topic I know a lot about, the background research for my book, would be a good way to learn about it. To be honest, I know from professional experience that it is very good at sifting through lots of data, which is relevant to my research, that probably saved me days, if not weeks, of non-creative grunt work. That grunt work was really just a basis for my research, not the actual substance of it. But like I said, it saved me days, if not weeks of time building that knowledge base, which has since expanded significantly through my own efforts. I have never and would never use AI to generate words or ideas for my book, but have used it for feedback on some snippets. And I seriously regret it. I also experienced the slippery slope of Googling a question and then asking a follow-up question in the AI summary area. Regrettably, this can be very helpful. I can ask complex questions, get links to pages that understand the context better than normal results, which is valuable. I have also used it more context-rich thesaurus for specific singular words. Even before AI, I always had a policy of finding a second source when researching, so I feel secure and I'm safe from hallucinations finding their way into my writing. Because honestly, for all we know on the internet now, an article that looks like a real result in Google or DuckDuckGo could be AI slop full of hallucinations too. Anyway, I'm wondering what your advice is to writers who may have asked AI for advice, feedback, or help with research and now regret it, even if we have maintained strict boundaries about our work being human-authored and double, quadruple check any research-related information the AI generated. I feel sick thinking I could have jeopardized my work because I was convinced this was okay. I think most of what I used to ask AI questions about my writing was from such an early draft it's not recognizable from what I have now, which is not even the final version, so I know it will change even more. I feel stuck between wanting to be honest with future agents and recognizing that anything I used AI for is so far removed from my actual manuscript. I'm very anxious to know how agents are approaching this. I don't want to be punished for being honest. Like I said, I wish I could turn back time because I feel like the people who are actually using AI to write for them, something I would never do, ! would not be honest without this. So that's kind of the end of the comment / question that somebody sent in. And I just felt like as soon as I read this, we just got this yesterday. As soon as I read this, I felt so much empathy. And I feel like this is person saying the quiet part out loud, which is really why I just wanted to say it even louder, because I'm assuming a lot of writers probably connect with this. Cece, do you have first thoughts?
I have a question. Does she say why she regretted it? I didn't spot that.
No,
did
I
miss that? Because I'm like
so.
Like a little brain foggy today, or is
it
actually missing?
Moral, I think it's missing, but I assumed it was kind of the moral side of it, is my guess. Or just the, like, if it's going to get in the way of her getting an agent, because if she then, you know, says, hey, I did use this in research in my first draft,
yeah,
that it might get in the way of her getting an agent.
Okay.
Yeah.
I ask because from what she's saying, she has used it in a way that has, in her view, of course, it's always in our views, improved her work. She's saying that she used it for researching the research. It's not even like, you know, like she's mentioning that it's been helpful. So and she also mentioned that she already has the habit of like checking sources and not just accepting things. So it sounds like this is someone who's like engaging with this with a lot of critical thinking. And is enjoying the, or has enjoyed or potentially enjoyed parts at least of the results it gave her, which to me is curious. I have been called out this week multiple times by very polite people saying in my DMs, Cece, if you've never used AI, how dare you say it's whatever? Which fair, I do think that the whatever I said was like, it's not for me, but maybe I didn't. Maybe I forgot to preface that I was speaking for myself only. But yeah, this person seems to be enjoying the results. So I guess you're probably right. Probably it is because she's worried about not getting an agent. This might be the part about this whole thing that I like the least. It's terrorizing authors now. Like,
yeah.
I don't like that. I don't like that. Maybe she has copyrightability concerns because the line is just not clear on that. Yeah. I have thoughts on how she should engage, but I also want to hear from you. I don't want to just ramble.
Yeah, I mean, I highlighted a few things, as you can see in our doc. Those were my highlights. The first thing I highlighted was, I think it's worth more conversation for a future episode because I suspect a lot of people are too scared to be honest about this. That's the part that really scares me as an agent. you know, we need to be able to have conversations about this. And the thing is, like, as you guys know, we say this all the time, every agent is different. Every agency is run like a small business. Every agency is going to have their own policies and philosophies about this and different knowledge bases about this, right? You know, from different generations, different agents are going to feel differently, I think, as well. So this is the part that worries me. And if writers can't be honest with us, then we're setting up a foundation and a relationship, a business partnership, where we can't be truthful. And that's the part that's really scary to
me. And we can't ever allow that. Like, that really will be the death, like the death of all the wonderful creative work we do. Like that,
yeah.
Like that is number one. Like that we really can't allow. And so I thank this person for sending in this message.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The other part I highlighted was, I have never and would never use AI to generate words or ideas for my book, but I've used it for feedback and I seriously regret it. So my understanding is, like, maybe they were putting in like a paragraph or a couple lines and
maybe more and asking for feedback. And that's the part that's, maybe she put the whole manuscript for all we know. Like,
we don't know. So it's snippets.
I almost
right?
want this so... person to come on anonymously. Like, we can blur her face and promise confidentiality for all of life. And so I can ask her questions. I want to know what her fear is. If it's the agent part, I personally think, like, if this were with me, okay, I would be like, first, thank you so much for telling me. Because that alone tells me that you're such an honorable person and I want to work with you even more now. Right? Like, if I'm having a chat with someone, I loved their work. Mm-hmm. So, like, to me, that's like step one, loving their work. But now I'm also loving like their morals and how honorable they're being. So thank you. I think I'd want to understand the parameters so we can be really transparent with publishers. I have seen more than one case. We have something in publishing called delivery and acceptance. So you have your, you know, your book deal and you get your notes from your editor and then you deliver the manuscript and it is hopefully accepted. You know, and that's when you get one of your payments. And I've seen in more than one case, my agent Slack was blowing up about this the other day, a publisher being like, hey, we got your delivery and we're now worried that AI was used. Now, this has not happened to me, did not happen to one of my clients. I want to make this very clear, but has happened to three different people that I know where the publisher is like, we're worried AI might have been used here. Was it? And then they're asking questions. They're asking really diligent questions. And all the agents that I spoke to said that the questions were very thoughtful. Like, it didn't feel like an interrogation. It didn't feel like, it was just like, hey, can we understand if you've used AI or not? Because publishers are scared about copyrightability. Without that, they can't make money. And this is a business. And so I would ask all these thoughtful questions that I could come up with. And I would, you know, do my very best to see if we could still move forward. Because I would want to move forward with someone who is both talented and honorable, but I just have so many questions, right? Like, I want to know, like, exactly how did you use it? How much of your manuscript was inputted? What was the feedback that you said you used it for? Like, show me the version pre, show me the version post. And that would actually require a lot of diligence on my part in terms of cognitive labor and time to, like, read one version, then read another. But I would do it. I would do it, like, without even thinking, because it would be worth it for me for a really good story. I would be like, I'm excited and I want to see if we can, like, find a way to, like, protect the author, protect the publisher, protect the deal, and move forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot spinning through my mind right now, but I think all of that makes perfect sense. And I hadn't heard about agents or clients being not interrogated, that's not the word you use, but being questioned at the delivery and acceptance stage, because this is what scares me, is like the breakdown of trust, right? So say an editor sends their edit letter to an author. What if the author then goes and, like, puts all of this into, you know, some software, and then, you know, the manuscript makes the changes back based on the editor's work? And I think that's I think the part of what they're worrying about, just to say the quiet part out loud there. Right?
And what's scary about that too is that I remember pre-email days. Now, I was very young, but I remember. And I remember, like, adults in my life saying things like, this is going to make our lives so much easier, because now, like, it used to, you have to write a letter, you know, mail it, wait for the letter to arrive, wait for the response. And now you can do it fast. And so we're going to have more free time. I remember adults distinctly saying this.
Yeah.
And then what actually happened is that you did not have more free time. Now people just expect an answer faster, right? So why am I bringing this up? I'm worried that some people are going to use AI, deliver faster, deliver edits faster, deliver everything faster because of AI. And then publishers are going to start expecting things faster from authors.
Yeah.
And then authors are going to be like, well, if that's the expectation, I have to use AI. So even the people who don't, like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, it just creates this vicious cycle that I do not want. So many thoughts. Oh my gosh. Every week we talk about this thing.
I know. To me, like, I also want to circle back to something else you said just about the cognitive labor. This is the part that's breaking my brain also a little bit, is just like the amount of work that, like, when you start to question things, and again, the trust piece and having to read manuscripts multiple times, not just for content and editing and all the regular developmental edits we do, but also for having to do another, like, quote unquote, maybe fact check for our clients. Like, that's just so much more work that we're also putting on our plates to have to be that intermediary. And yesterday was the AALA's town hall. It's the Agents Association in the US, their town hall, and I attended it. And one of the things I brought up was like the upskilling. And I also wrote about this in my Substack. I'm just, the amount of upskilling that agents have had to do, you know, beyond the like core skills that we kind of came into this business with is kind of blowing my brain. I mean, I'm learning more about technology than I ever thought I was going to learn. Yeah. The depths of copyright law, not being a lawyer. Like, agents are constantly having to upskill. And when we're just like upskilling and upskilling and upskilling, like, how far are we getting away from the core job that we set out to do in this industry, right? Like, we didn't get into this business to be the AI police. That's not what I got into this business
for. Oh, definitely not. Yeah.
You know?
And I think
that's hard.
And I think that that's a role no one really wants. I think it's why, like, you know, to the people who tell me that I have strong opinions on AI, you guys are right, I do. I think that's why I say to steer clear. You know, because it's the only way we can be super, super safe without any kind of ambiguity. I understand that might be super naive of me. I get it. I genuinely get it. And I'm listening and I'm, you know, I'm a person with a thinking brain and my opinions are like, I'm always trying to like update my opinions and like figure out all the moving parts. But I do have, like, you guys are right to say this to me. Like, I do have very strong opinions on just stay away from the thing, because aside from the moral, aside from the theft, aside from all the stuff that is very important, and I'm not saying it's not important, but there's also the fact that I'm worried it's gonna blow up book deals. Do you know how hard it is to get a book deal, people?
To make
oneself vulnerable. Like, it's like, you know, it honestly feels sometimes like you're walking a balanced rope carrying an egg, like balancing it in a spoon in your mouth. Like, and it's like, you're gonna add an earthquake to that? Like, can we not add the earthquake?
It's too late. The earthquake's here. I mean, tectonic plates have been shifting. So,
yeah,
I mean, and I also coming back to what you said, like, this is a thinking job. We have such a, and it's a luxury for us to have a thinking job. And also, not everybody is entitled to a book deal, which we talked about many times on our shows. And so I'm worried also the ability to access technology that could make you do it faster and all those other things that we just talked about will make people feel entitled to having that thing where it's like, it's the thinking job that you have to work your way towards. Being an author isn't something that you just get to decide to do. Anybody can be a writer. We can all open up a document and write something down. But being an author is when you become published, right? It's that, like, making your work published, starting to monetize that. And not everybody is entitled to that. And so I guess I'm worried that people are going to think it's even easier to get into this business when actually these tectonic plates that we just talked about are making it even harder.
Can I ask, do you mean like traditionally published? Because there is self-publishing, right? Like, and that technically is accessible to all. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess. Yeah. I always think more about,
I know we trade in trade publishing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
No, I'm just,
it's a good
I'm just
clarification.
Wondering.
Good clarification.
Cause you know, people can do that.
The last thing that I highlighted from this really interesting note that was sent to us was kind of like a chunkier section, but I think the heart of it was just like, I'm very anxious to know how agents are approaching this. And so, as you guys know, I mean, you listen to the show because you want two agents' opinion. These are just two agents' opinions. And I think that we are quite knowledgeable on the subject. We work really hard to continue to be as knowledgeable as we can on the subject, just because we don't engage with it on a daily basis in our work. Because again, Cece and I feel like that's a violation of our fiduciary responsibility to our clients to be putting their work into that technology. I think I can speak for both of us when I say that we would never do that. we feel a moral, ethical responsibility that we wouldn't do that. But I don't know what other agents are doing. I wrote in my Substack this past week about, you know, not all agents always act in the best interest of their clients. You guys know that there's a lot of bad actors out there. You know, I can't tell you for certainty that there aren't agents that are going to put materials into this or write edit letters with it or, you know, any of the other numerous things that agents could do with it. And so I can't make you guys promises on that. And we are also anxious to learn how other agents are going to approach it because we want a certain ethical standard for our business. And we believe in a high ethical standard for our business.
That's a really good point. I also think she also meant like, I'm anxious to know how agents are approaching dealing with writers who have used AI in the way that she's used and whether it'll be a deal breaker. It's like to your, because you're the one who clarified that for me. So I think that's also a little bit where her anxiety is coming from. Yeah, conversations. The more trust you can show, I think that's rewarded, honestly.
I just want to be eyes wide open, you know? I just want all the information because we don't want to get later on in the process, you know, at the DNA stage or publication stage, and then you're like, oh, actually this. Like, that's really hard to recover from. So honestly,
surprise in storytelling, good. Surprise in agent-client relationship, not good. Let's not do that. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, should we wrap up this segment, Cece?
I think we should, with a final note on, you know, debriefing last week's conversation, where, of course, Andrea Bartz joined us. You know, personally, I've always been a huge fan of Andy's books. I've talked about them. I've hyped them up. I remember meeting her for the first time, IRL, and being like, you are so talented. Like, she had to hear that from me. That is ridiculous. But what I wanted to say, and I have a copy of The Last Fury out here. I have copies of all her books, but I have them as ebooks. Is, you know, Andy did do a wonderful service for writers when she took on Anthropic, you know, and was the lead plaintiff in that case. And that was like a huge thing she did that was, I imagine, so time consuming. And if you want to show appreciation, if anyone listening is like, that's so cool, Andy, because I think it's cool and maybe you do too, if you want to show appreciation, a wonderful way to do that is to support her books. And I'm not saying anyone has to, because we would never tell anyone, you know, how to spend their time or their money. But I did get a lot of messages from you guys saying, Cece, it's so cool that Andy did this. Like, she's such a badass. And she is. Like, we'll never be able to repay her. And I'm like, okay, fine. You'll never be able to repay her. But just saying, guys, supporting her books is a great way to show appreciation.
Yeah. And I believe the paperback just came out this week. So if you haven't bought it yet, grab it in paperback. If you have it in hardcover, buy it in paperback for a friend. We were so honored that Andy was our first guest. And as Cece said, appreciate her for everything she's done. All right. We are going to hear from our sponsors and then we're going to come back and talk about some headlines from the week. All right, Cece, we are back. So, you know, there's always news in publishing. We highlighted a few things that were kind of newsworthy this week. I grabbed some UK book stats that I wanted to share with you guys. And then Cece wanted to talk about some things in Publisher's Lunch. So here are just some UK book stats for you guys. I like to kind of bring you numbers whenever I can, whenever they cross my desk. So out of the UK, the publishing industry has reached its highest ever revenue in 2025, according to the Publishers Association, up 3% to 7.4 billion pounds, with audiobooks, digital, and export key areas of growth. The overall home market was up 3% in 2025 to 2.6 billion pounds, while the export market was up 4% to 4.7 billion, making up 64% of revenue and emphasizing, quote, the importance of international trade for the publishing industry. Overall, print saw no percentage change, remained at 3.8 billion, while digital, what they call ebook, increased 7% to 3.5 billion pounds. The audiobook market grew by 10% in 2025.
10%.
Yeah.
So cool.
We love that double digit growth. So, lots of good stuff happening there on the digital side of things.
Yes. Double digit growth, like double fudge brownies. Yes. Points for that. I love it. Love seeing growth. I did highlight two things that came out today on Publisher's Lunch, and they're both AI related. Because that's all we talk about. So the first is that Google Playbooks is now launching something, which they are calling a reading companion. It's essentially a in-book chatbot obviously powered by AI, where readers get to engage and ask questions. And you can opt out per book. But yeah, like you are chatting about the book with this bot. And then again, also today, Storytel launched an AI companion feature, which is essentially an AI-powered tool that can explain why a specific book will resonate, helping users pick their next story and generating recaps when a listener has lost the thread of a story in progress. It includes a chat interface. You know, it's using LLMs from Google Gemini, OpenAI, Anthropic, and others. And it's going to launch for Swedish subscribers today, I guess, and be available in other markets in August. I wanted to highlight these two things because we talk a lot, as we should, about AI use in the creation process. Carly and I are agents. We work with storytellers. And we're always talking about, you know, the AI, any AI use for the creation of stories. This is, I guess, that this is also AI, but it comes later in the process. This is AI use for reading. So reading is a very solitary activity. I suppose you could listen to an audiobook together, but I feel like most people don't. I feel like most people listen to audiobooks while they're doing other things using their earphones. And you know, when you're reading with your eyes, you're obviously doing it by yourself, typically. And however, one of the most magical things about reading is that after you do read by yourself, my sister and I do this all the time, my mother-in-law and I do this all the time, you talk about books with other people. It's why book clubs are so popular. You know, you go, hey, what about this scene? Did you think that scene in that book was this or that? What did you think about this character? And that is one of the most magical things about books for me. I would not have my life if it weren't for book clubs. That's how magical book clubs are for me. It's where I found some of my best friends. It's where I found my people. It's where I've had some of the most interesting discussions, and I have a very interesting job, so you can imagine how interesting those book clubs are. And the fact that we're going to have these companions, I guess, I mean, again, this does show my bias. People are right to DM me. I feel sad because I just don't believe that an AI companion will be able to substitute a human companion and the human discussion. And I know that someone's going to say, who says it's substituting? It could just be adding. Like, things are finite resources, typically time, you know, attention span. I do think that some substitution will likely happen for the most part. So yeah, I don't know. It makes me a little sad. I understand that it's the world we're heading to. I understand that I have to a degree, get over it. But I feel like the magic of human interaction when talking about books is so special. I love it so much. Like, yeah. Carly, you and I, we're not going to say the book, but there was a book that we had very strong opinions about. And like that mini discussion we had, that was so much fun. We end up learning things about each other that we didn't know because we say, oh, I have a friend who did this, or my husband this, or my friend that, or my sister that. And I just feel sad that a bot is going to exist so people can talk about it with a bot. Like, no, thank you, bot. But I get it. I get that I'm just one person.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing that freaks me out is the scraping part, right? Like, in order to create a summary, it has to scrape it and put it through some LLM, right? To come up with the summary. And that's the technology and that's the coding and that's where we are. I do feel like this is the thing 2 years ago that we were worried about. And now it's here. And I mean, the news just came out, you know, a couple hours ago, but you know, I haven't seen any backlash because I've been recording the podcast today.
Yeah.
But like, I'm just worried there's not going to be enough of a back, like enough, they're not going to get that much backlash. You know, it says in this, you know, the Google one, for example, like, oh, people can't opt out, but there's like no notice. And they're saying, oh, you know, only users who have an entitlement to the book, such as a purchase or a rental, are able to use the book insights. But, you know, we start there and then we just slide and slide and slide, you know, like that's how this starts. And that's how we got there. So I feel a little bit defeated, I guess. That's what I'm saying. I feel defeated.
Yeah, I share that sentiment. I think the part that's really sad, going back to Andy's, you know, case with Anthropic, against Anthropic, I should say, like the scraping was deemed legal as long as the books were purchased legally, right? Yeah. Like, it's supposedly sand. Like, that's how the courts feel. Like, as long as you bought the book legally, you do get to do that. Or they, you know, that was the ruling anyway. And don't like that, but I'm going to see if I can go one Shooting the Shit episode without saying I don't like AI, just so the people who keep DMing me, people, I know you'll still DM me. Just give me like a week's break from being like, Cece, why do you hate AI so much? Yeah, fair. Totally fair.
I know. Maybe we can also make a challenge to go a week without talking about it at all. We can find something else to talk about that week.
Let's do that. I like that idea. You know what? I don't know if it has to be next week. I will leave that up to you. Well, no, because next week's solo. But like, whenever, we'll come up with a summer challenge. There will be one Shooting the Shit episode where we won't talk about AI. Watch how on that week the biggest AI thing will happen. For sure. For sure. It's going to be like, and then the Martians came and they're behind AI. Like, for sure that's going to happen.
Okay. You got your tinfoil hat on now. I see how it is. All right. Well, we will end there. Thank you guys. If you have more kind of debrief thoughts, we're very welcome to hearing them. You know, we really do like getting into the weeds and the nuance of this whole thing, because that's where the truth lies. And we barter truth over here, because we really care about working with real humans. So thanks for hanging out with us for another week.
Cece Lira is a literary agent at Wendy Sherman Associates. If you'd like to query Cece, please refer to the submission guidelines at www.wsherman.com. Carly Waters is a literary agent at PS Literary Agency, but her work on this podcast is not affiliated with the agency, and the views expressed by Carly on this podcast are solely that of her as a podcast co-host and do not necessarily reflect the views, opinions, policies, or position of PS Literary Agency.
What's up, everyone? This is Cece. So I recently grabbed lunch with an acquiring editor from HarperCollins who told me that the number of submissions she's been getting has nearly doubled. And I wasn't surprised at all, because every agent and editor I know has been talking about how the volume of submission keeps increasing. So personally, that is a wonderful thing, because it's more reading for me, but it also means I have more chances of matching with authors. I consider it a privilege to review queries on Books with Hooks, and of course, in my submissions inbox. But at the same time, I talk to writers who tell me that they wish agents would read more than a few pages because, and I quote, "my story gets better in chapter 2." I have to be honest, this kills me. It's like me wanting chocolate chip cookies to have the nutritional value of kale. It's just not realistic. Like it or not, no agent, no acquiring editor is going to stick around to see if a submission gets better. It's not because we're mean, it's because we get dozens and dozens every day. I know it's harsh, but ambitious writers embrace harsh realities. So here it goes. It's your job to make your opening pages irresistible, to make agents crave it, to make agents want to read more. That's why I'm so excited about my upcoming course, Starting It Right, How to Begin Your Story in the Best Place and in the Best Way. I created this course after studying hundreds of books. I've mapped out elements that are present in the beginning of all successful novels and memoirs. And I've designed checklists, actual checklists, that you can use to ensure that your story's beginning is seducing your reader. We'll cover how to write a great first line, different types of beginnings, and how you can choose the best one, the best place to start, and the best way to start. Yes, these are totally different things. When it makes sense to add a prologue and when it doesn't, how to frame your inciting incident in an appealing way, how to balance exposition and mystery, how to include context but not weigh it down with too much backstory, and what to do if your story has more than one POV or timeline. Most of all, I'm going to show you how to make readers want to turn to chapter 2. Join me for this multi-day course designed to help you break through the noise. You'll leave with a clear, actionable breakdown of exactly what goes into a terrific beginning. If you've already signed up, come prepared to take lots of notes. We're talking hundreds of slides with real-world examples and specific techniques, plus a super fun surprise that I can't wait to share. I hope to see you there.